Tip, give Sid a proper introduction, even though most everybody here knows him, but I'd just like to just tell you what I would say about Sid, okay? The first thing is, I'll tell you a little bit about my own story. What happened to my wife and myself is, we were living in San Francisco, and we'd been together for 3 years. And our relationship was like a leaky boat, you know. And we went to therapists and marriage counselors and seminars, and they told us if we made another hole in the boat, the water would go out through the new hole, see? So we did, but what happened is there's just more water in the boat. So we kept punching holes in the boat, and every time there would be more water in the boat. We couldn't... So it looked to us like our relationship wasn't worthwhile for us, but we were both too insecure to get out of it, because when you're in a relationship like that and things aren't working, you know, your self-esteem goes down and everything, so we were really stuck. In terms of my private life, I couldn't relax. I didn't know how to relax. So it was like, I was like the Roadrunner, you know, in the cartoons. It's like, Linda would say, well, let's go out and relax. So I'd go outside, I'd sit in a chair, I'd say, okay, now what? You know, I mean, that was it for relaxing. And it was like I had a high idol. I just was under pressure all the time. Now, I accepted it because I'd always been like that, and that's the way my family was. And I saw it as kind of a good thing because it made me so productive. My career was going very well in the sense that I was making a lot of money, and I was enjoying my work, but it was kind of like that old good news, bad news joke. The pilot tells the passengers, I have good news and bad news. The good news is we have tailwinds, we're making very good time. The bad news is we're lost, you know? And that's the way I was in my career. I was losing the dream, I was losing the hope, I was losing the optimism that I could really help people, and I was starting to give up on my work. And that was a really painful thing, that the longer I did the work that I was doing at that time, the less hopeful I was about the possibility of helping people to change. Now, I had heard from my partner at the time, a fellow named John Enright, that there was a person up in Canada who was talking to people, and they were changing. And this intrigued us, and we talked to this person who told us that, and we said, well, you know, how long would he talk to people? I mean, what is it, like a 6 month course or something? And he said, well, no, he talked to maybe 45 minutes. I said, well, what kind of people are we talking about here? He says, trouble people. People from who have dropped out, people who are compulsive workers, people who have psychological serious illnesses. I said, wait a minute, let me understand this. This guy gets these people in the room, he talks to them for 45 minutes, right? And now these people are cured? He says, yeah. I said, what does he talk about? The guy said, I don't know. I don't remember, about thought or something, I don't. Well, John and I could not get it together. We couldn't imagine what it was. We figured there must be something more. This person's probably uneducated about these matters, and we'll go up there and see through it in a second, you know. So we went up. Linda and I went up to Salt Spring Island, where Sid was at the time, and we went to one of his talks. And we go into the room. I go in the room. I'm telling you, that's when it hit me. Because there was a vitality in these people. There was an optimism. There was a softness. And then I was a relationships counselor. So I looked at the couples. And the couples were close, but not clingy. And I had never seen that before. There were more happy couples in that room, that gymnasium, than I had seen in my entire career as a counselor. I mean, even my friends, they were just a room full of couples, and these people all had this feeling of life about them. And I could not get it together. And this was before there was even a Sid Banks in the picture for me. The results were right there in that room. Well, now I was fascinated to hear how he did that. So he came in and he talked, and I mean, I was really shocked and disappointed when I saw Sid, because he was such an ordinary kind of down-to-earth person, and I was hoping he would be a really, like, a charismatic figure, you know. But he wasn't. He just sat down and he talked in this really soft, gentle way. And I noticed that people were, like, at the edge of their seats. And I couldn't get it together. I said, how could people get so enthralled about something that's so low-key? So this was all like a giant eye-opener to me. It turned my world upside down. He talked. They were very accurate. I had no idea what he was saying. You know, he stopped, and that was it. So I kept going around to the people and try to find out the real story, you know, the discipline, you know, the techniques that they were using. I knew there was more to it than met the eye. But there wasn't anything more to it than that. And I'm telling you, when I stepped into that room and saw those results, it did something for my hope. It brought back my dreams. And that's what, to me, that's what youth is, just keeping your dreams. And it brought them all back. And even though we hadn't even met Sid, our relationship changed because we both saw some hope. And I saw some hope in my work. And I saw some hope in my life. And that was before Sid even entered the room. The results were so powerful that it gave me hope. And if I'd never met Sid, I honestly think it would have helped me. But then I met him, and he was very interested in what I was doing. I think it was kind of like entertainment for him, you know. He kept asking me what I did with people. And I knew he was laughing, but he wouldn't do it. He'd say, oh, that's interesting. Let me get this straight now. You know, it's kind of like those Bob Newhart dialogues. Let me get this straight now. The people are in pain, right? So you get them deeper into the pain in order to make them happy, right? I said, yeah, yeah, it's good. He said, that's very interesting. You know? So we had our dialogues, and I went away extremely irritated because I felt like he was putting me down, and I felt like, to be honest with you, what is a welder know about psychology, you know what I'm saying? If he understood what I understood, he wouldn't be saying that. He's totally unrealistic, he's Pollyanna, but the guy's heart's in the right place. That's how I dismissed it. I walked away and dismissed it. I went back to my work, and the seed had been planted. I began to question the pain I was putting people through. I began to question the relationship between my own struggles in life and the fact that I was teaching others. You know, I began to wonder if it was the blind leading the blind. And my work got undercut, and I couldn't do it. And John Enright, bless his heart, said, George, you're a wonderful guy, but you're killing us professionally. People don't want to go to your seminars. Your heart's not in it. Go up to Salt Spring, spend the summer there. We'll pay you for it, and then see what happens. And that's what I did. And maybe I saw Sid 5 times over the summer. But I spent the summer with people who had, like yourselves, who had some understanding of the possibilities in this philosophy of life. And by the end of the summer, we had a wonderful summer. My oldest daughter had a tremendous experience which changed her attitude towards life forever. And my wife and I got along beautifully, and we had a great summer. But we felt like we hadn't really learned anything, and we were a little had trepidations about going back because John had kind of financed me, and I really felt like I hadn't learned anything. But I didn't understand at that time that this way of reaching people works through your eyeball. It doesn't work through your intellect. And when I went back, my eyeball had changed, and I saw life so differently. It looked like a circus, and I saw people causing each other unnecessary distress. And I saw people doing the work, my students doing work, and they looked like Attila the Hun does therapy. You know, I mean, they were so harsh, and I was thinking, oh my God, did I teach them that? And at that point, Linda and I were seeing life differently, and we just proceeded. on, and everything improved every year, and we just took it for granted. And that's what's happened. Our career has blossomed, and our relationship has gotten nicer and deeper, and we enjoy relaxing now. It's like a dream. When I was a young boy, if I'd said, what would I want to happen to me in my life? It's what happened to me as a result of my contact with that man. I'm amazed at what's happened. That this has happened in my lifetime. I can't tell you how grateful I am. So I'd like to, with the deepest respect, introduce Sidney Banks.
Well, that's quite an introduction, George, and I feel the same about you, that you've brought a lot to this world, and it hasn't even started yet. And I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I'm very extraordinarily surprised that there's so many people turn up. If there are questions, please ask them, eh? But try and remember, you're looking for one answer, just one. It's about this big. And if you ask a question, it gets this big. You ask another question, it gets this big. You ask 100 questions and you get lost. You got to go back inside. Because I swear, every human being in the world is mentally healthy. It's only the thoughts that create the problem. And if you find out the secret of thought, you're healthy. And it doesn't matter what you talk about. You can talk about the mind. You can talk about religion. You can talk about the mystical qualities of life. No matter what, it's all the same. Just in a different disguise. So we'll try and break through the disguise and get to the core of what we're looking for. It's really very simple. Our life is created from a divine thought. Now this is nothing to do with you. Don't get your old egos up, eh? It's a divine thought. The divine thought is creator. You see, everything comes from what you would call, the Eastern mystics would call, the great nothingness. And the great nothingness is also what the scientists would talk about, a formless energy. It's also what the Eastern mystics would call the great oneness. The only teacher in this world is yourself. It's inside. That's why the wise from the beginning of time have always told you, look within. And people say, oh, good, good, we're going to look within. Then the next thing you know, they forget all about it. Believe me, it's a cosmic creation. You are part of that cosmic creation. You can't escape it. And they talk about free will and free mind. The wise have always spoken about that, and that's true. Whatever you want to see in life, that's what you see. You have the freedom of thought. The thought is the secret. So we get from thought, we get to the what you call the perfect psychology. And this is not arrogance when I say perfect, because you're all got it. The perfect psychology. And the perfect psychology is the study of mind, consciousness, and thought. But these three basic principles, you can find anything in this world. You can find your mental health, you can find your happiness, you can find a perfect marriage. Every couple here is sitting in the perfect marriage, and the only thing that creates any imperfections, again, is the thought. People will say to me, well, when did this perfect psychology start? It started before the creation and the existence of time itself. It always has been, and it always will be, and nobody in this world can change that. A lot of people argue with me. I've had two psychologists sit, and they would argue with me. And one would be saying, Sid, you know, a lot of people don't believe in a free will, a free thought. They think that's bunk. And the other one says, oh, I'm sorry, you're wrong. I think we do have a free will and a free thought system. And the other one says, no, I don't think so. And they don't realize they're both using it right there. And what you've got to look for is common sense. If 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4, walk away. If somebody says they're going to find you happiness in your marriage by you screaming at your wife or your wife screaming at you or getting all your hostilities out, please think of this, think of it. You go to get help because you're arguing, then they encourage you to argue. Then when you get happy, somebody turns around and says, oh, that's a bad sign. Because when you're happy, there's only one other place to go, and that is down. So you've got to stay down all your life, just in case you get happy, and just in case you go down. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. You know that knowing in the second chance that Jonathan and Mama Leela talk about? Well, you have that inside you. Because honestly, it's only this big. It's one singular answer. And the one singular answer will come when you see us, what I'm calling a spiritual fact. And a spiritual fact can never, never change. It's as constant as life itself. And if you want to talk about spiritual facts, see, if you hear one spiritual fact, you will have what you call an enlightening experience. That enlightening experience, what it does, it takes all the delusions that you have about life and takes you back to the purity. Then you look outside and you see everybody totally walking in innocence. They're all under a delusion, and you've got to break that delusion. And you break it by learning to see and learning to hear. And people will say, well, oh, we've got to listen to you. No, not at all. Matter of fact, I'll tell you right now, everything I'm saying right now, honestly, don't listen to what I'm saying. Listen for a feeling. Because if you believe everything I say, then there's an old Scottish saying, if you believe everything you hear, be careful, you might start eating everything you see. And that's no good. You got to find it yourself. And listen, not to Sid Banks, not to George Pransky, not to Dr. Mills. You don't do that. You listen, period. And if I learn to listen to Dr. Mills or Dr. Pransky, then that means to say, I've learned to listen. And every human being that comes in contact with me, I hear them. And when you hear a person, you always, always hear an innocence. Your heart goes out to them without the commiseration. That's the ego. You don't commiserate. That's the problem. You, as therapists and doctors here, you know that. If you start commiserating with your patient, you're going to pick up all that negativity, all those wrong thoughts, and all those that sad feeling. You don't do that. You learn to see. And when you learn to see, you see every single person that walks in your office is a healthy human being. Only thing is, there's a lot of rubbish there. And you've got to get the rubbish away so they can find its mental health. So we start talking about sexual problems in marriage. We start talking about arguing in marriage. We start talking about the problems you have with your children. We start talking about the problems in the work. We start talking about nothing else but problems. That's not the answer. That's encouraging to sickness. The sickness has already been created, and if you talk about it, it's not going to do any good. You've got to find out where it comes from. What creates this sickness? And the simplicity is self-thought. And I know that anyone here could stand up and say, Sid, you're full of it, because it's not thought. It's wrong with me. I really do have a problem. I'm not stupid. I know that. But it's created from thought. Trace it back. To conquer this world, you've got to go back to where you started. You've got to go home. And home is where the heart is. Dead center of the universe. And they say, well, I know that. It's in the chakras. It's in the heart, the physical heart. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about has got nothing to do with material or human beings or anything else. Home is that great nothingness. Heaven is where you go. Heaven is not out there. You don't have to wait till you die. Heaven is here. It's on earth right now. Pure psychology is not man-made. It's inside. Inside. Fate is one of those spiritual facts. It's fate that we should be here together today. It was fate that whatever you did yesterday, you did. If I die today, that would be my fate. You can't get away from fate. Fate and the now are one and the same, in a different disguise. Now can never change. Now is always the present. And people will say, oh, Sid, I got you in that one. Because yesterday was now, yesterday, but it's no longer. No, sir. Fate has, and the now have never changed. The simple reason is, from second to second, it's always now. You can't run away from now. You can't run away from your fate. And when you honestly see that, something magical happens to you. Whatever happened, okay, psychology is basically, it's based on the past. And right off the bat, that's wrong. Right off the bat. You've taken the wrong curve somewhere. You can't go back into the past. It's true that all your experiences from childhood up to now is what creates your character and creates your behavior, and you do it automatically, you go into a habit. Well, the only way to get rid of that is to forget the past. Now, I'm talking about running away from your past or denying it ever happened. Find out the secret to thought. You see, if I had a bad experience when I was a child, and I'm sitting here, and I'm really happy, and I'm having a good time, as soon as I bring in thought from the past regarding such a, you know, an experience, I've lost my happiness. So what do? You go into the office to talk to your doctor, and the first thing he says, well, let's go back into the past. Again, it's the wrong curve. You're taking the wrong road. Forget it. And if you're happy, enjoy it. It's when you enjoy, that's when you keep your happiness. When you have a feeling, it's all in a feeling, it's a feeling of gratitude. So you look for a feeling, and that feeling will bring you the feeling of gratitude, happiness, or sadness. It's all a feeling. It's a feeling that we let control our lives. You know all the atrocities that's gone on throughout life, and it's gone on right now in all these different countries, people starving, there's people dying, there's people killing each other, there's wars, there's etc., etc. I don't have to tell you that. Well, you can never change that. Never, never, never in a million years until you change the thought system of humanity. And when you change the thought system, all that vanishes. All hate, all that stuff vanishes. It's all thought. I used to talk for hours on it, so just thought. It's all thought. That's all it is. Thought creates our character. Our character creates our behavior. You tell people this, and sometimes you get real angry. They'll say, "Damn it," said Banks, "that's not true." And you see them, they're really angry and they're hostile, and they'll say, "Wait a minute, I'm just you're proving my theory right now." Because listen to you. You're angry, you're hostile, especially gestalters or people that really get into that anger. And the next thing you know, they're saying, "But I love my anger. I love it. I love it. I think it's healthy." You see, they're looking for help because the poor souls are suffering because their mental attitude is so negative. Then they come out and say, "But I enjoy it. 2 + 2 is no longer making 4. No matter what it is, it must add up. And if it doesn't add up, walk out. If you walk in for assistance and somebody says to you, you have to get angry at your wife, you have to assert yourself more and get angry at your husband, you must walk out. Now, you don't condemn the person that's telling you that. You condemn what they're telling you. Not a person. And when you condemn what they're telling you, then you're in neutral territory. You found your happiness, and you leave that person with their anger, but you don't have any animosity towards them. And that's the secret. Again, it's thought. Honestly, everything is thought.